Welcome to the Wednesday show. It is March 30th, and this is Fantasy Baseball Today. What's up, everybody? I'm Adam Azer. I got Scott White. I got Chris Towers. I got a big show today. Over-unders. Chris's love for Yasiel Puig. Chris's love for the podcast non-rejects league.
Excited about that? League?
Do you have a lot of love for that? A whole lot of love?
Sure. I don't even care that you guys left me out of the first league and had to create a... No, it's fine. It's totally fine. I get it, guys.
It's your league.
I wasn't even on the podcast, so it makes perfect sense. I'm not even a part of the fantasy editorial team, so it's perfectly fine, guys. Don't worry about me. I don't even care. I don't even know why you think I'm mad. I'm not even mad. I think it's funny.
Very good. Very good. Hey, Roberto Ozuna is the Blue Jays closer. OMG. I did not see that coming. And that is
all the signs were pointing the other direction.
Poor,
I felt like.
Poor Drew Storen. Can we just pour one out for him? It's so, the guy can't catch a break.
He can't. He's doing great. They get Papelbon. Papelbon chokes the best player in baseball. They stick with Papelbon. They actually trade away Storen.
I mean, look, you can't argue with Ozuna either.
No.
It's a situation where Storen's ended up just being on a team that has had an overabundance of good closer options.
I mean, Ozuna's better. Storen's good, but Ozuna's even better, I think. And this makes him possibly a top 12 closer. I don't know if he'll quite crack that threshold for me, but he'll be just outside of it, if not.
One thing I do worry about potentially with him, and I think we saw it a little bit last year with him and with the Blue Jays in the ninth inning in general, is this team doesn't necessarily get a ton of save opportunities for a team that we think is going to win 95-plus games.
Well, yeah, a lot of offense.
They had this weird stretch where they went like a month without a save chance. It was very, very weird, but I'll say that won't happen again. Let me just add, like, you say Ozuna potentially top 12. This is a guy who had 16 walks, 75 strikeouts, and 69 and two-thirds, .92 whip. What's the difference between him and Ken Giles? Why isn't Ozuna potentially top 5?
Well, I think Ken Giles... What was the actual K rate for Ozuna?
Over 1, 75 strikeouts.
9.7. I mean, Giles, I think, could be like 12.9.
That's, okay.
But I'd take Ozuna over Giles right now because... Seems like the Astros are not committing to Giles in the closer role and are actually giving indications that it may not be him. So.
And I do think it's worth pointing out that Ozuna did have some home run issues last season, 0.9 per nine, and a 34% ground ball rate is very low. Now, you can get away with that as a closer if you're striking out 10 per nine and posting, solid walks and keeping guys off the base paths, but it's a concern. There could be moments this season where he just kind of runs into problems there.
All right. Would you rather have Robertson or Ozuna?
I would rather have Robertson, again, because I think there's a bit of a disparity in strikeout rate there.
All right.
I agree. Also, Robertson doesn't have... like Storen's pretty good competition for
that's
the role.
True.
Like, it's a situation where if Ozuna does go... a two-week span where he gives up six runs, it's not crazy to think that Storen might get a chance.
Mark Melanson or Roberto Ozuna?
I think I'd go Melanson there, even though some of the dominance numbers are trending the wrong way for him. I mean, he did get 50 saves last year, and I think it's going to be a similar situation for him in Pittsburgh this year.
All right. Well, then my last question about this, if you have Roberto Ozuna and Drew Storen, would you feel comfortable dropping Drew Storen right now, or do you suggest hanging on to him?
It depends on the depth of the league. Certainly, like a head-to-head points format with only 21 spots, you're absolutely dropping him. I probably would in a mixed roto league of 12 teams or fewer, too. But if it's any league where any other setup men are owned, let's say with the exception of Dellin Betances, then I would say Storen needs to be owned too.
Okay, would you drop Drew Storen for Brock Holt?
No.
Yeah, I mean, that's a super fringy outfielder, I guess, in a five outfielder.
Well, no, he's middle infield, third base.
Yeah,
he's eligible at middle infield, corner infield, second base, third base, and outfield.
I maybe in an on-base percentage league. I'm trying to think like what he does all that well. He's just kind of okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, his greatest value, I think, is that he plays. He gets at bats. He's going to get at bats now that we know he's platooning in left with Chris Young. And they're not completely empty at bats. I mean, he'll hit for average.
In the first half of the season.
Yeah. What I see Holt as with that multi eligibility, and I think he's eligible at three positions to start out.
Yes, second base, third base, and outfield.
He is going to be a guy who gets picked up periodically as an injury fill in for owners, but it's going to be easy to waste when the time comes.
Yeah. Right. And if you missed the news, Brock Holt is Boston's left fielder against righties. Chris Young expected to face lefties, which means Rusne Castillo is probably a bench player. They have Betts and Bradley in left field and center field, and then this platoon in right field. So Holt, we can talk a little bit more about him later. You know, he has stretches, it seems, where he's really good and really fantasy relevant, and then he just regresses to being a pretty
I would also
player.
Say it wouldn't shock me if Jackie Bradley's not the everyday center fielder by June.
Okay, yeah, also something to look out for.
You don't, because you don't like Bradley?
I think he has, I'd have to look at the numbers again, but from what I remember, he's a guy with pretty major platoon issues. He's been really good against lefties, but he's struggled against righties. He turned that around a little bit towards the end of last season when he went on that hot streak, but it's just...
That would be a reverse platoon split, which is interesting. I'm usually a little skeptical of those because Bradley being a left-handed hitter, hitting left-handers better. I think you're right. I think that is how it played out last year, but... I mean, he obviously still has a lot to improve. I just feel like the stock's moving up with him. Bradley, that is.
Well, you know who Chris does like. He may not like Jackie Bradley, but he likes Yasiel Puig. I alluded to this maybe yesterday, the day before, Chris, but this is a guy that you compared to Bryce Harper. So
he's not that good.
Right, okay. But you did compare the two.
It's an analogy. The way I look at it is... last year, people were kind of starting to get off the Bryce Harper bandwagon. This is a thing we do in sports, not just in baseball, where if we really get excited about you early in your career and then you're not exactly what we expect from you, we completely go the opposite direction and overreact and act like you're just trash. Like Bryce Harper was a pretty good to great hitter in his first three seasons. He had injury issues and in a couple of the seasons, but overall, like he was as good as you could reasonably expect a 21-year-old hitter to be. And then people just kind of started backing off. You started hearing like, oh, he's overhyped, all this stuff. And then he goes and puts together one of the 25 best seasons in baseball history. Yasiel Puig's not that good. His ceiling's not that high. But when you look at his skill set, he's someone who clearly has above average BABIP skills, clearly has decent but not great contact skills. He's someone who can get on base. I think he's someone who could steal 15 to 20 bases in a season. He's someone who could hit 30 plus homers. I could see him being a, you know, 300, 400, 500 triple slash guy with 30 homers and 20 steals in his breakout season. And I don't see any reason why this couldn't be that breakout season. I think he's someone who could be a top five hitter.
20 steals. You think he's got 20 steals in him?
Sure, he's gotten to the low teens, hasn't he?
I'll check for you.
Yeah, no, I think higher than that. I think
the biggest issue for him is he's been kind of
11 is the steals
to put
high.
It. But he did that in 148 games. He did it 11 in 104 games in 2013. So I think there's a chance.
Sure.
The biggest thing is he runs himself into a lot of outs on the base paths, and I think if you project a little bit of improvement in his base running, because I think he's like a 60% stolen base success rate guy, I think if you project a little improvement there, it's not that hard for him to get to 20.
He is going in the seventh round on average in Roto, and even later in head-to-head. Let's see.
Well,
here.
Which outfielder is going around Puig?
Like Steven Piscotty, Curtis Granderson, Hunter Pence.
I'd much rather have Yasiel Puig than any of those guys. It's just from the upside alone.
I would agree except Pence because I think Pence is already high end. But Puig, Yeah, I may be overlooking him a bit at that price. It's as kind of a lottery ticket. It's kind of earlier than you usually think of a lottery ticket, but it's still low risk.
He's a lottery ticket with first round potential, whereas some of the lottery tickets that you're taking on a little later might have, you know, if they hit their fourth or fifth round guys. This is a guy who really does, I think, have elite upside. And I end up grabbing him as my, you know, typically my third outfielder. This editorial slow draft that we're doing right now, I got him as my third outfielder after Stanton and Brantley. And like, it's a three outfielder league. I wouldn't normally want to take three outfielders in my first seven picks, but when Yasiel Puig's there at 91, it's just like the upside is too high for me not to draft him.
And that's what we talked about yesterday. Just so enticing at outfield. And that's a 14-team league, so it's not like it's outfield is quite as deep. But he's not going in the Piscotty range if you look at Fantasy Pros. Puig is going more with Matt Kemp and Michael Brantley and Jason Hayward. So much Hayward, but it's Puig, Kemp, Brantley, and then Pence.
Yeah, I think that's about where he is too. I think Piscotty's more the outlier for us than Puig. I think we have an especially high projection for Piscotty, which bumps his draft value up higher than it probably should be.
Okay. Let's move on here. I just wanted to let Chris have his say there. I was thinking about the worst decision I ever made in fantasy baseball. And I don't know if there's anything that comes to mind for you guys, but I've told this story before, but I actually went back into the transactions for 2012 and I looked at the specifics. It's the worst fantasy baseball decision I ever made. Part of me being very aggressive on the waiver wire at the beginning of the season. I love to add and drop players that, you know, if I'm not dropping any valuable players, I'll be very aggressive. So in 2012, I dropped Kyle Seager. I guess I drafted him. 2011 was his rookie season. Seager played like 53 games. He didn't do much. So I dropped Kyle Seager on April 4th and I picked up Chris Parmalee. Okay, whatever. 10 days later, I wanted Kyle Seager back, so I dropped one of my starting pitchers for Kyle Seager. 11 days later, I was done with Seager, and I dropped him for Kirk Nieuwenhuis, who was on my roster for a while, until June. So basically, I ended up dropping a starting pitcher for a guy who eventually was replaced by Kirk Nieuwenhuis. That
starting pitcher?
What's that?
Yeah, let's hear the name.
He won the Cy Young. He was R.A. Dickey. I dropped the Cy Young Award winner on April 15th. Mm-hmm. And I think Scott ended up with him that year, if I remember correctly. That was in our Memorial Roto League.
Yes, that does sound familiar. And I was pretty shocked when you dropped him. Yeah.
Worst decision I ever made.
He had a good April. He was great right from the beginning.
But he wasn't even April. It was April 15th.
Okay.
So, I mean, yeah, he might have been good, but I guess I just wasn't buying it with him.
Yeah.
And, oops, I should have bought that.
Yeah, he's a pretty exceptional case.
Yeah, he is.
Historically, pitchers who peak at age 36 or whatever it was.
Yeah. Anything come to mind? Can you guys remember off the top of your head, like, the worst fantasy decision you ever made?
In a head-to-head dynasty league last year, I was in first place, and I decided to make a run for it, and I traded for Corey Kluber right at the trade deadline. And if you remember last season, Corey Kluber got me about, I want to say, like 4 or 5 starts in the final month and a half of the season. And I gave up 3 years of a dollar Steven Matz for a Corey Kluber who could not be kept.
Oh.
And I lost in the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. It's not R.A. Dickey bad, but it's pretty bad.
Yeah, my bad one involves Kluber too, and it was also in a dynasty league, except I was on the wrong end of this, because Kluber, kind of like Dickey, though of course much younger, was also, you know, kind of came out of nowhere to become the ace that he is.
Kind of like Cliff Lee.
The year before he won the Cy Young, he had a very strong year, not Cy Young caliber, but, you know, he entered the mixed league discussion. Early in that year, I picked him up off waivers in a 24-team dynasty league. So he would have been locked in for less than $5 for, you know, less than $10 for the next several years. And I dropped him. I don't even remember who it was for. I think it was somebody like Eric Stoltz. A 24-team league, you know, what's on the waiver wire? And needless to say,
Corey Kluber.
Needless to say, yeah, I've been kicking myself ever since.
All right. Let's get moving here. Email of the day at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com is from Adam in St. Pete. He says, "Dear DeVoe, Bivens, and Bell."
Yeah.
Switch them around a little bit there. Can you guys
move your dead?
Can you guys discuss David Peralta? Projections on him seem to be all over the place. Do you expect Peralta to break out? What's his upside? And by the way, Winston is hands down the best character in New Girl.
Yes, he is.
No, he's
yes,
not. No.
Hands down is a little strong because they're all great.
Oh, Scott, I saw, so like I'm like a season behind. I'm about midway through season four.
Okay.
I saw a scene. Chris, do you watch New Girl?
Yes.
The best scene I've seen in that show. I cracked up and I had to play it for my fiance. I thought it was so funny. So Cece has a crush on someone. Jess doesn't know who it is. Jess is told that the crush is on Nick. Meanwhile, Cece wants to buy a popcorn machine for the bar and Nick has been saying no. I'm trying not to give too much away, but Jess confronts Nick about liking Cece. And Cece thinks she's talking about the popcorn machine. Do you remember this scene, guys?
Vaguely.
It is unbelievable. It's all about feminine hygiene, but in a very veiled way. And it's a huge misunderstanding, and it's hilarious. So.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, best scene ever.
The typical.
Wacky sitcom hijinks.
Yes.
The best running joke is Winston's inability to prank.
Yeah, that is very funny.
It's their single best running joke.
All right, David Peralta, what do you guys think about him?
Well, I think I like him more than the other three. He was originally on my breakouts list, but I found...
Where's he breaking out to?
Well, he's breaking out to being a must-own fantasy player, because he wasn't last year because he didn't play enough. And now the breakout is... He's going to play every day because they don't have the obvious platoon partner anymore.
But that doesn't really change the fact that he maybe can't hit lefties. So
But if he's going to play every day, like there are in a certain depth of league, if you don't play every day, it doesn't matter how good you are against any handedness. You're just waiver fodder. And that's where Peralta was at the end of last year. So, you know, you look at his OPS. And partially because of a batting average, maybe that he won't be able to sustain. His BABIP was over 350 last year. His OPS was near 900. And I think, you know, even if you shave it down to 840, 850 with every day at bats, that's going to be a must-start player, potentially, Peralta. But the reason I removed him from my breakout list is because I think, you know, there's a lot of high upside outfielders available at that stage of the draft. That's usually where I'm going after Gerard Parra. I think Will Myers has comparable upside to David Peralta. And so I just find I wasn't drafting him enough to back him as firmly as I was. But I do think he's good. I do think he's going to be somebody who's owned all season long.
Chris?
Yeah, I agree with that. I would expect him to regress quite a bit in batting average for sure, just beyond the BABIP thing, just the fact that he's probably going to play more against left-handers. But I could see him being a low 800s OPS guy with, you know, maybe, is it crazy to say 20-20 potential?
That the steals might be a little bit of a stretch, but okay. he's not a nothing in steals. I would think 25-15 maybe is the And that we're talking upside. He may not reach either of those numbers, but that would be a best case scenario for Peralta.
David Peralta or Christian Yelich?
I'd draft Yelich first.
Yeah.
They're good at different things.
David Peralta or Corey Dickerson?
Dickerson.
Peralta.
Oh, really? But that's more because you're down on Dickerson. Right?
Yeah, I worry about the same thing with Dickerson with the platoon issues, and I worry about how much our expectations of him are built on Coors Field.
Okay. Let's do some over-unders here. And later on, we've got news on Tyler Duffy, Jesse Hahn, and Felix Dubront. Jed Jerko, Hyunsoo Kim, Phillies closer situation, Trevor Story, Colorado's starting shortstop. Just more rotation battles and position battles, things like that. But let's do some over-unders. From Eddie's Parrot on Twitter. Roberto, what's that?
Is Eddie's Parrot just mimicking Eddie? Is this?
Yeah, I don't know.
Did Eddie say this to the parrot and say, you know, command him to type it into Twitter?
It would be funny.
Are we basically hearing from Eddie, but through the parrot?
I think it's probably Eddie via the parrot via Siri.
Okay. Okay. No, I follow you.
Well, Siri did a very good job then with no spelling mistakes. Roberto Ozuna, over under 30.5 saves.
Got to take the over. Oh, yeah. I would take the over for just about any closer I expect to keep the job, though.
I would say I'll go over, but I don't feel good about it.
Billy Hamilton steals 60.
You have to go under.
Well, he stole 57 bases in 114 games last season.
He's never done it.
He stole 57 bases in 114 games. He's never done 60. He's basically done 60.
He's never stolen 60 bases.
He stole 57 in 114 games, Chris Towers.
Is he going to play more than 114 games this season?
Well, if you want to make that argument, fine, but don't say he's never done it.
But that's the argument I'm making. We've never seen him steal 60 bases in a season for a variety of reasons. He might not play every day. He's not very good.
As bad as he was, if he stayed healthy last year, probably would have stole 80 bases.
Okay.
So you take the over.
I'm not for automatically predicting somebody isn't going to do what he's never done before. But I'll take the over a little. I don't think he's going to push 80, but I don't think the Reds have much incentive to sit him even if he is terrible, because the Reds as a team will be. And they do have some outfielders, not like Jesse Winker, I think, is going to be up before the end of the season, but he's not going to play center. So I don't know, unless they decide Jose Peraza is. But I think they just trade Brandon Phillips and stick Peraza. I'm thinking out loud here, but ultimately I'm going to take the over for Hamilton.
Marshall Witzberger, over under on Mike Trout steals, 15.5 steals for Mike Trout.
I was 11 for 18 last year, which is a bad number on the front end and the back end. But he did have 16, so he did top this just 2 years ago. It's a surprisingly low over-under in that it's well below his career average. But I'm inclined to take the under just because of the way he's been trending. I'm not counting on Trout for as stolen base help really at all. So I'll take under 15.5.
Under.
All right. Dub, over under 2020 season for Rougned Odor. Home runs and steals. Rougned Odor 2020.
I think I'm going under. He did have that 32 stolen base season in 2013, but ever since then he hasn't really been running as much in the majors or the minors. So I would go over and under.
Over on the home runs, under on the steals. I would agree with that. He actually got caught more than he was successful running last year. So I think I'm not really counting on him to ever be a great source of steals.
6 steals and 13 attempts in 120 games for Odor in 2015. All right, from Kevin. Here's an interesting one. Indians outfielder Rajay Davis, over under on his steals. He didn't give a number. I will. 25 steals for Rajay Davis.
I think I'm still pretty confident taking the over on that.
I'll go with the over.
Well, what do we think about Rajay Davis? Is he fantasy relevant?
Yeah. In Roto. And he, until Michael Brantley gets back, he's probably going to play a lot. So maybe for the first couple weeks, he's more than just a low-end steel source in Roto.
Okay.
But that's ultimately what I see him being. Somebody who, there's a good chance you'll be able to pick him up off waivers if you're trailing in steals, and hopefully he'll make up ground for you.
All right. Next up, we have Rodney White. Over-under for Michael Brantley, 15 home runs, 15 steals.
I'm going to take the over.
That's pretty much what he was last year.
Yeah. And last year, he was limited by a back issue early on that really sapped him of his power, came on strong late. I understand, you know, obviously he's coming back from a shoulder injury this time, so maybe it'll be a similar impact. But I think at his core, the core player, Michael Brantley, is more like the guy we saw 2 years ago, because that's also what we saw in the second half of last season. So I see him be as more of a 2020 type than a 15-15 type.
Yeah. 2 years ago, Brantley was 20 home runs, 23 steals. Last year, he was 15-15 in 137 games.
I'm in such a weird spot with Michael Brantley because I think I draft him in like 80% of my leagues, but I don't feel all that comfortable telling other people to draft him. Like, that's a risk I'm willing to take, but I don't want to like stake my public reputation on it because I really do think there is reason to be concerned about this shoulder. Now
this is where you draw the line. You've made some pretty outlandish statements about players, but you're not going to recommend people draft Michael Brantley.
I am a mild taker. I think 15-15, like, I'll push on that. It's his back shoulder when he's hitting, right? I'm pretty sure that's the one he had surgery on. So it's not the lead shoulder. So you can think it's a little less, important when it comes to power. From what I've seen, he's a guy who tends to slide feet first when he steals bases. So it's not, I actually like looked this up. I tried to figure it out, and I think he tends to do that more often.
This is probably going to make us look like big time nerds, because one of us is going to be wrong, and I'm honestly not sure who it is. But wouldn't the back shoulder be generating the power?
Yeah, no, I think so.
Maybe it's his left shoulder then. No, it's his right shoulder, and he's a left-handed hitter, right?
Yeah, well, that would be his front shoulder.
He's a left-handed hitter, but it's your top hand.
No, he's a right-handed hitter. No, he's a left-handed hitter. You're right.
Yeah, left. Yeah.
Oh, this is terrific stuff, guys.
The top hand on the bat generates the power. And
let's just quit while we're behind here. Let's move on. Byron Buxton's batting average, over under 260 for Byron Buxton's batting average. Chris,
I'm a Byron Buxton believer. I'll go over. I know he was dreadful last season, but the minor league track record's so strong. The strikeout rate in the minors wasn't so crazy that it would lead you to believe that last season's contact issues were a sustainable thing. I think he adjusts and hits. He's going to be a high BABIP guy. I think he gets there.
BBB, Byron Buxton believer. Chris Towers is going over 260. How about you, Scott White?
Yeah. Look, I think Byron Buxton is going to be a great player for a long time. Still not confident it's going to be this year. I'll take the under. He was a player I removed from my initial sleepers list, actually, based partially on the way he's performed this spring, yeah, which is terribly.
Yes.
I'm going to say, as a Buxton owner in two leagues, one of them being a keeper league, so I would, of course, never drop him. But in my seasonal league, if he gets off to a slow start, I'm going to try everything I can to not drop him, because I could see him struggling. I could even see him getting sent down and then coming back up and having a great second half or something like that.
And he's still striking out a lot, which is a concern in the spring, but he was sick for a little while, I think, and missed some time. And I think it's just kind of, I just believe in the talent.
Yeah, I can't blame you for that.
All right, let's fly through the last few here. Starlin Castro home runs, over under 20. He has never hit more than 14. 20 home runs for Starlin Castro.
I mean, if you made the over under 15, I could think about taking the over, but 20 is such a leap for a guy who's never hit more than 14. I do think he's going to be get back to being a pretty much a must-start infielder in fantasy, middle infielder.
All right.
You know, maybe in leagues that don't have the middle infield spot, he'll be, you know, in between starting and sitting, but he'll be a solid, high average, okay power guy.
All right, that's Starlin Castro. Chris, you get the next one from Jimmy S. Over under 25 home runs for Randall Grichuk.
I will go over. He hit a lot of fly balls last season. He hit a lot of them hard. I think he's going to be someone who is kind of an all-or-nothing hitter, but I think he's going to be a solid power source.
From Dino Ruiz, over under $500 for Heath Cummings' wedding gift to Adam Azer.
Oh, that is That is going to be under.
That's going to be under by a factor of 10.
I mean, if you hear about the lengths Heath goes to save on groceries.
Oh, I have not heard of this.
You know, he doesn't do a one-stop shop kind of thing. You know what I'm saying?
This is good for tomorrow's show.
He's hopping around.
I don't anticipate.
It's good. I'm not holding that against him, but I think it gives you a pretty good idea how he's not going to wow you with the amount he gives you for his wedding.
I'm not expecting many $500 wedding gifts. That would be pretty nice.
Yes, that is. Maybe this person's overestimating what Heath makes in a year.
Yeah, or what anyone makes. All right, Stephen McDevitt, Miguel Sano home runs, over under 27.5.
I go over.
Yeah, pretty easily.
All right, and finally, this one's from me. Devin Mesoraco, over under 260, over under 28 home runs for Mesoraco. 260 over, with 28 homers.
Over under.
Okay. Yeah. I'm guessing 28 home runs is what he hit 2 years ago?
No, it was just a random number. I don't know.
Okay.
He had 25 2 years ago, but it was only in about 120 games.
Right. He would have topped 28 in a full season, but and maybe he's really that good. I just think it's an awful lot to conclude that was, you know, true Devin Mesoraco when it's the only indication we've seen of that kind of power from him. And it was 2 years ago and with a hip surgery in between. So I agree. Over on the batting average, under on the home runs.
Let's do the boring stuff real quick here, guys. Injuries, news, and notes. All right, Minnesota sent Tyler Duffy down to the minors. Ricky Nolasco is their fifth starting pitcher. You're not going to want Ricky Nolasco. Does anybody have any interest in hanging on to Tyler Duffy?
Deep league, sure. He'll be up eventually.
All right, Oakland sent Jesse Hahn to the minors, and Felix Dubron is their fifth starter. Ooh. You're not going to want Felix Dubron either. St. Louis is going to use Ruben Tejada and Jed Jerko at shortstop, and Matt Holliday, Brandon Moss, and Matt Adams will all see time at first base. What's the most important thing to take away from this for the Cardinals?
Tommy Pham's going to play a lot if Matt Holliday's going to play some first base, and I don't think it's outside the realm of possibility that Matt Holliday becomes eventually the primary first baseman, allowing Tommy Pham to play regularly. He's a guy with sneaky high upside, kind of a late bloomer type, but somebody who could be a good all-around hitter in terms of getting on base, power, etc. If it all comes together for him, if he gets the playing time and capitalizes on it. So he's somebody to definitely keep your eye on in an NL-only league. Maybe even go ahead and stash in that format, depending how big the roster sizes are.
Would you rather take a chance on Brock Holt with all that eligibility or outfield-eligible Tommy Pham?
Well, I mean, Pham's the upside pick. Holt's a much better bet to contribute in some way. So it kind of depends what you're looking for.
Yeah, if you drafted like Michael Brantley, maybe you'd probably want Brock Holt.
Right.
But I tend to think the reserve spots should be used for upside.
Okay, so Hyunsoo Kim, Orioles outfielder, he might get sent to the minors. Saw in our Memorial Magazine Roto League, Joey Rickard was picked up for $4. Hyunsoo Kim was dropped. Rickard, Orioles outfielder. What do you guys think about that transaction, that fantasy baseball transaction?
So Rickard and what was the other move?
Hyunsoo Kim, which is totally fine, obviously. The guy's been horrible and probably won't be in the majors to start the year. And adding Joey Rickard for $4 out of 100.
I would imagine that's, I mean, you'd rather have the Orioles starter in left field than the bench spot, which I guess it's not a foregone conclusion Joey Rickard's going to play regularly, but based on the spring he's had and based on their alternatives, I would think he's probably their best choice. He should be a good speedster.
All right, what do you think? I mean, is Rickard a guy that we should be looking at in roto leagues?
Maybe in a Rajay Davis sort of way.
Yeah, I mean, career high 30 steals in the minors, not like a huge success rate, 70% success rate or around that on his stolen bases. He seems okay, but I wouldn't get excited about it.
Philadelphia could go closer by committee with David Hernandez and Dalyer Hinojosa. MLB.com, by the way, has pronunciation on some players, so that's pretty cool. Dalyer Hinojosa and David Hernandez. All right, your take on the Phillies closer situation. And Hinojosa had some, he had a lot of walks, but he also had a lot of strikeouts, which I think we see a lot from closers. Set some decent numbers. All right, what do you think, guys?
I think it's ultimately going to be Hernandez, as these committees don't last very long, and it probably would already be his if he didn't get off to, if he didn't have that triceps issue in the middle of spring training. So he would still be the guy to own. But the fact that it is a committee, and you know, I can't guarantee he'll eventually be the guy, and obviously that they'll be closing for a bad team, whoever it is. This is close to bottom of the barrel as far as closer situations go and fantasy value related to them.
Well, and actually in our fantasy league, the same one I keep referencing, our Roto League, which is a fab league, free agent acquisition budget, you have to bid on players, $100 budget. Was this just you know, a mistake? Somebody got Andrew Bailey for $13, dropping Jed Jerko.
No, no. It's there's a chance he could be part of that committee. He looked like the favorite just a week ago, but then he's falling apart here towards the end. So there's a chance he won't make the roster, or there's a chance come the end of April he is closing regularly for the Phillies.
I just can't.
So I don't think it was a complete mistake.
$13 on Andrew Bailey on a bad team, a guy who's been a bad pitcher or an injured pitcher recently. I mean, he was really good at one point, but it's been a while. You know, I'm not spending 13% of my budget on a guy who's not even been named the closer.
I wouldn't now. I'm just saying I don't think it was a mistake at the time.
It was yesterday.
Changed. I know. A lot's changed since yesterday.
Oh, all right. Fair enough. Well, Scott, you bid $10 on Jeremy Jeffress, dropping Jurickson and Profar.
Yes.
There's no beef, obviously, with that. Just the dollar amount, 10% of your budget here on March 30th. You feel okay about that? What's your fab approach?
Well, in a league like this one, and the specific rules of how fab works in this league are important, because you $0 bids are allowed. So if you run out of money, it's not like you can never buy another player. And it's daily transactions. Fab doesn't run once a week, so there's not this one moment where every team is itching to make a move on the players who've been accumulating value over the course of the week. So I don't imagine there are going to be too many bid-offs over the course of the season, maybe when a top prospect gets called up. But, you know, a lot of those guys are going to be stashed a week or two ahead of that even happening. So I found if there's a player I really want on waivers, particularly at a time when I think a lot of eyes are on waivers, certainly the first run of Fab would be one of those times, is just go ahead and bid enough to make sure you get them, because it's not like, I don't feel like with the way these rules are set up, I'm ever really hurting for Fab dollars at the end.
Yeah, and the spending is less at the end because fewer teams are still in it, so you're bidding against fewer people. Trevor Story is Colorado's starting shortstop. I want to read an email here from Mike in New York City. He has Jung Ho Kang, but needs a short-term shortstop replacement in a points league. Would you rather have Trevor Story or Addison Russell? Now, you don't have to worry necessarily about the Reyes factor here because he has Kang. So he just wants to know who you think is going to be better short-term, Story or Addison Russell. What do you guys think?
I mean, Addison Russell clearly has more upside in the long term, but he wasn't. It's a situation where if Story had made it to the majors and put up mediocre numbers, we would probably not even care about him. And that seems like the most likely outcome, is that this guy who has major strikeout issues is probably going to struggle. But then you look at, you know, other guys in Coors Field, and Coors Field does tend to make even guys with strikeout issues put up decent batting averages.
It's hard to fail there. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the thing, is like Nick Hundley is a 310 hitter.
Yeah.
All of a sudden last season, Nick Hundley is someone who strikes out in a quarter of his at bats, is a 250 hitter for his career. But he gets to Coors Field and all of a sudden he's this good hitter. Story, the one thing we know about him is that he has power. He struck out or homered 20 times per 150 games in the minors, a 206 ISO. He's hitting really well in the spring so far.
Mm-hmm.
I think if it's just for the short term, I might go Story.
I would agree, I think. And I, this may, Let me put it this way. If I drafted both Story and Addison Russell, I would start Story every time the Rockies are playing even half a week at home until Russell proves to me that I shouldn't do that. You know?
Okay.
Because it's not like Russell was great last year. Clearly, he does have the higher ceiling, like Chris said,
but it's
not like you know what you're getting from him exactly.
The one thing with Addison Russell is I do buy into the talent eventually, and I've ended up with him a lot this season.
Me too. I've got a lot of Addison Russell.
At the start, you're still waiting for it.
All right, some more news. CeCe Sabathia, likely the Yankees' fifth starting pitcher. And I really am not feeling Masahiro Tanaka. He is not pitching very well right now, and he's not even guaranteed to be the Yankees' opening day starter. I will say that I think there could be some early season struggles, just as there were last year. Remember, his first start of the year was horrible, and people were freaking out because of the elbow thing, and rightfully so.
I think, and for me, the elbow thing hasn't gone away.
No,
it
hasn't. I
still have the same concerns.
And not only that, he had surgery in the offseason to repair bone chips in his elbow. So Tanaka, I think there are a lot of things working against him right now. Be patient with him, but he was one of my least favorite picks of all my picks this year.
I'm certainly a lot lower on him right now than I was a year ago. A year ago, I was kind of the draft Masahiro Tanaka guy, and now it's just kind of, he's fine, but he took a step back last season.
Coco Crisp missed yesterday's game with a hamstring injury. LOL. But he's still, he exists. Kevin Gausman hoping to be back during the third week of April. Trevor Bauer had a good start on Tuesday, and that could go a long way in securing fifth spot for him. Now, Will Smith, we talked about Scott picking up Jeremy Jeffress. Will Smith is going to try to rehab his torn LCL rather than have surgery, but the earliest Smith could come back would be about midseason, so you don't have to worry about that. And Yasmani Grandal expected to be ready for opening day despite his forearm injury. All right, a couple ways we could go here. Let's read some of the transactions that we've seen in our leagues. You guys tell me what you think about them. So these are CBS Fantasy staff members making moves. Already told you about Andrew Bailey and Jeremy Jeffress. How about Al Melchior adding Tyler White for $7?
In what league?
In our Roto league. So this is
mixed Roto?
Mixed Roto, 12 teams, 30 roster spots per team. It's pretty deep. Not extremely deep, but, deep.
Tyler White strikes me as one of those players who is going to be more valuable in real life than fantasy. And I know why Al likes him, probably because of that. He walked more than he struck out last year in the minors, which is always a good thing for a hitter. And the fact he's third base eligible to begin the year helps. We're not just treating him like a first baseman. He's also eligible at that weaker position. So I'm just not confident he's going to hit for enough power for either corner infield spot to make an impact in mixed leagues. Once upon a time I said that about Kevin Youkilis, another high walk guy, and he turned in like a 5-year stretch where he was a complete fantasy stud. So, I don't want to rule out anything for Tyler White. But right now, I'm treating him more as an AL only option.
You know who he kind of reminds me at first blush is Derek Barton.
Okay.
Just like solid plate discipline makes him a pretty good hitter, but just not enough power. I guess he might be a higher batting average guy than Barton was, but just not sure there's a ton there.
Okay, we also have Michael Taylor added for $7, dropping Brendan Rodgers. Michael Taylor for I don't know why you would had Michael Taylor for $7.
Well, I don't know why you would have had Brendan Rodgers at all in a single season league. So, I put in a $3 bid for Taylor. I think I wanted him based on the hype surrounding him this spring, and I've always felt like he has good upside, a power speed guy. Those are rare. So it would be a good bench option in a Roto league in the hope that Worth gets hurt at some point. Taylor enters the everyday lineup and never looks back. So, $4, he ended up with Taylor and I didn't. So at this stage of the season, if there's really a player you like, and again, it's not set up that you have to save a lot of auction dollars. I wouldn't be stressing about $4.
Okay, but this is also the same owner. I'm not trying to pick on anybody. It's the same owner who spent $13 on Andrew Bailey. So now you spent $20 on Bailey and Taylor, and now you're starting to talk about a problem with your fab budget.
That's a fair point.
So be a selective. You can't just go out and get everyone you want. How about adding Alex Colome and dropping Eric Ibar for $6? Just adding Colome for $6, do you think that's worth it with Boxberger out for a little while?
And Danny Farquhar could be getting saves instead. You know, that is $6 for maybe 10 saves.
Or what if he does great and keeps the job?
There's a non-zero chance of that. But I would have, if I was that guy, I would have rather bid 11 on Jeremy Jeffress than settle for Colome at six.
$6 for Juan Nicasio from Al. Got no beef with that.
No,
that's fine.
I've seen people pay a lot more for Nicasio on Fab than that. So
$2 for Adam Conley.
Totally fine.
$1 for Aaron Sanchez for me, dropping Jonathan Neese. And Scott added Keon Bruxton and Tyler Naquin, getting some speedy outfielders in there, and dropping Rich Hill and Jimmy Nelson, dropping your starting pitchers. Interesting. Five outfielder.
Two bench starting pitcher. Yeah. And this was a league where it was the auction league, actually. And my outfield looks pretty yucky. So I'm trying to give myself as many possibilities of escaping that outfield situation as I can. It's
yeah,
not
I think
that
you
I'm
a trade offer to me in that one.
Yeah, I'm offering you Todd Frazier for Adam Jones and I think a couple of peripheral pieces because my infield's a lot better than my outfield.
Oh, you got to do that. You got to take Frazier for Jones.
It was. There were other players involved.
Okay.
We're not gonna litigate this on the podcast.
Okay.
There were other players involved. I wanted Simeon too, but but anyway. I'm trying to give myself as many avenues as I can to escape this dreadful outfield situation, and I think a couple of bench starting pitchers, albeit ones with high upside, are fine in a roto league. Sacrificing them is fine. I think there will be others like them on waivers down the line.
Let's finish with some Team Name Tuesday leftovers and your emails at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Nick Todd on Team Name Tuesday suggests Kareem as Drupal Pilar. I think it's great. I think it's very funny.
I get it.
Kareem. Oh, okay. I was a little slow to the draw on that one. I gotcha.
John from Connecticut. P. Diddy and the fam, as in Tommy fam. But he also put P. Diddy as in Didi Gregorius, which is very funny.
Hmm.
And Salazar Slytherin.
Salazar Slytherin.
I like that.
That's Slytherin's name, right? That's like his real name in Harry Potter?
Yes.
Yeah.
Can confirm.
That's good. I'm not a Harry Potter guy, so I never thought about that, but good job.
Somebody tweeted at us, Panic at the Rizzo.
Yeah, Panic at the Rizzo was good.
And I like responded that with Panic at the Desclafani. I think it's not quite as catchy, but it's a little more accurate.
Well, why don't you put disc like Discofani? I think that would work.
Maybe, or Panic at the Descla?
Disclofani.
Something like
hybrid
that.
Hybrid it.
There's something to work with there.
Yeah. And from Tip, Maeda in Taiwan. Maeda in Taiwan. Like made in Taiwan.
Oh, okay.
I like
I guess.
It. It's good. All right, emails. From Ryan in St. Louis, where the Italian food is amazing. Take your word for it there, Ryan.
Okay. Were you guys talking about Italian food in St. Louis or something?
Yeah, I was trolling Heath.
Oh, okay.
And I was, yeah.
Because he's from St. Louis and all.
He's from, you know, I think I said Missouri. I didn't say St. Louis.
Okay. All right. That's fair.
He is
from Missouri.
Ryan says, hi, Mike, Chris, and the Mink Man.
I have no idea.
Oh, I think that's Mike, Mike Francesa, Chris Russo. I don't know who the Mink Man is.
Okay, sure.
Okay, anyway. What are your guys' thoughts on Avisail Garcia? Will he qualify as a post-hype sleeper? Avisail Garcia, what do you think?
You know, somebody pointed out to me, for as closely as I've been paying attention to spring training, completely overlooked just how good of a spring Garcia is having, showing good power. And, you know, he did hit a career-high 13 home runs last year, so he took a little step forward as far as that goes. I still think the upside is overrated with him because he just hasn't come anywhere close.
That's the thing, is that it's
been
theoretical
4 years. Yeah. And it's not like this wasn't Bryce Harper coming up through the minors. It was a second tier prospect.
And we haven't seen the upside even really in the minors. Like, his minor league numbers are pretty
right,
mediocre.
Exactly.
As well.
We haven't seen it anywhere. So unless the .333 batting average and 4 home runs and 48 bats this spring is the start of it, and at age 25, you know, maybe. I can't. There are too many other outfielders I'm excited about to really look at Garcia in a mixed league. Like Michael Taylor, I'd take Taylor over Garcia.
Jonathan from New Jersey says, "Hey, Gus, Jesse, and Walt. My league is head-to-head categories with OPS and quality starts. Do these additional categories change the rankings of any players dramatically? Who are some pitchers after round 15 that can produce 15 quality starts or have the upside to do so?" So
I don't think it changes the way you approach anyone, really. I mean, I'm sure there are a few guys whose value might change either way, but these are stats that are already kind of baked into the things that you're already looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Like, your guys that hit home runs are going to have good OPSs. Your pitchers that have low ERAs are going to have a lot of quality starts. It's kind of that.
That's why I don't like quality starts better than wins, ultimately, because I just think quality starts is already factored into the things you're looking at in other categories.
Yeah, but wins are just kind of random.
Yeah, well, quality starts are more predictable than wins, I would say.
Yeah, I agree, but I think they're repetitive.
Yeah, no, it's you know, I'd have to look at a quality start leaderboard again, but I don't feel like there's much distinguishing the great pitchers from the good ones in that category. Maybe wins, there may be a stronger correlation there, actually.
The one thing I would say with quality starts is maybe avoid younger players or pitchers or guys coming off injuries. Like, maybe Jose Fernandez is a little worse in a quality start league where he might have a handful of starts where he goes 5 1/3, gets to 105 pitches, and they pull him out early.
I would also say pay more attention to walks for hitters, because obviously OPS is contributing to that. Somebody like Mark Trumbo would hit a lot of home runs without a great OPS, so there are a few players, few exceptions to what Chris was saying earlier. And, you know, just if I could follow up on this quality start point, because, you know, I took some heat for saying that isn't a great alternative to wins, and that really I don't care to find one, because I think Roto is so flawed. Just if you're playing roto baseball in the first place, you're doing it because you're a traditionalist. So just follow tradition. But that's not the point I was trying to make. What I really think would be a great alternative to wins, if you're dead set on finding one, is starts of 7 innings or more, just without any other qualifications attached to it. A guy goes 7 innings or more, he gets a tally mark, and the person, you know, the teams with the most of those number of starts, they, you know, it's just another category, whatever. Problem is, I don't think there's a way to actually implement that.
Why don't you just do innings? I would like to say that I don't agree with you. I would not want to play in this type of league.
Because innings, I think, you know, it might detract from how many relievers somebody is willing to carry. It would have a negative impact on Dellin Betances' value. I just think there are more far-reaching consequences for innings than there would be for this stat. This stat is a measurement of innings, but there's a quality aspect to it too, because very rarely are mediocre pitchers going 7 innings consistently.
Okay, so listen, we got a lot of emails. We're going to save them for tomorrow. Tomorrow's going to be bold predictions, mailbag, any other news that you need to know about. Probably drafted by now, but you still have a big weekend coming up, so we will not. Any question you have that you want to know about, submit it, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Obviously can't read them all. We're getting a ton of emails, and I do appreciate that, but we'll do our best to answer as much as we can. Scott White and Chris Towers, thank you today. I don't know who's going to be on tomorrow, but it's going to be some great combination, so get excited. Thanks, guys. Talk to you later at some point. Have a great day, okay?
You too, Adam.
See ya.
What a terrific outro. See you later.